Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the Surf Beats podcast. Again, for those who don't know, this podcast goes or dives into the origins of surfing alternative lifestyle. Also, we talk about great things in vinyl records, what's happening in the culture right now. So this second episode, where wheels haven't fallen off yet, is with Tom Rule. Tom Rule is the overall proprietor, owner, and guru of Moldy Toes Records in San Clemente, California. So just a little background into Moldy Toes Records. A lot of people get or ask questions about the origins of Moldy Toes Records, and that really comes from a Residents song. Residents are a avant-garde band, or they continue to be an avant-garde band up in San Francisco, California. In fact, they have a great record coming out for Record Store Day this April 21st, so it's coming up pretty quick. But they make some great tunes, and yeah, so it comes from one of their songs, again, avant-garde, so obviously there's some, doesn't have to venture too far to get to Moldy Toes. But in our conversation, we talk about Tom's origins in the record business in Southern California, and then making a great transition into Tower Records. Tom was a Tower Records manager and buyer for quite some time, and that put him on his musical journey across the United States, encountering a lot of great artists in and out of the store, seeing a lot of great shows. So we cover some great, interesting musical tastes in terms of everyone from Frank Zappa to Randy Newman, who are all personal favorites of ours, even some jazz stuff. So I hope you enjoy that aspect of it. Also, we dive into the purpose behind the resurrection of vinyl records and kind of how that ended with Tower and then came back with the independent record store. There's some small record stores like Moldy Toes, but there are some big ones like Amoeba Records in LA, where you can kind of get the provenance of how big vinyl can go. But it's kind of interesting to talk about how CD is really the go-to platform, and then how digital music took over with the, I guess, iTunes or Spotify, and then moved back into vinyl. So we talk about the reasoning behind that and why people are just tuning in and, you know, dropping out. So we end the conversation with a little feedback and tips for people who want to get into vinyl records, what to look for when they purchase a turntable. And turntables aren't really that expensive nowadays. A lot of people try to go with these Crosleys that are between $60 and $70, but you can really get a great turntable, either used or a new turntable, just another $20 more that won't destroy your records, and you get tremendous sound out of it. So we talk about tips along those lines and a little bit about mastering a record and who to look out for when purchasing records and certain engineers and whatnot. So yeah, Tom, again, this is Tom Rule of Moldy Toes Records in San Clemente, California. He is open from good old Tuesday to Sunday. And that's typically from 11 to 6. Hours do vary on Sundays. But go in and talk to him if you have any further questions. But here we pick up with the show. Thank you.
Second episode of the Surf Beats, the podcast show brought to you with, you know, great surfing and music explorative adventures. Luckily, the show hasn't fallen apart after number two, but we're trying things.
So is that why it's called Surf Beat?
Yeah, surf, okay. Surf. Yeah, the Surf Beats.
I get
so
it.
It's got a little bit of surf going on.
I like that.
We have some alternative, and the beats covers up the music side.
You the get alternative shirts music. Made?
I'm gonna try to. I'm thinking about just a bunch of cavemen holding a bunch of musical notes and beating each other. That's what I'm thinking
and
about.
And how's that tie in the surf?
Just because all surfers are just primitive people.
Oh. Well, I'll take an XL.
All right. So, this is second episode of the Surf Beat with Tom Rule, owner, proprietor, and overall badass of Boldy Toes Records. So, today we're going to be talking about everything vinyl this time. First episode is more surf-oriented, but we're going to talk about some great old music, great old tunes. So, Tom has a record store in San Clemente called Moldy Toes Records, and it's been around for
Almost 4 years
now. It's pretty epic. I'm definitely going to do a little pitch for it in the intro part of it after I reverse a little bit, but, you know, it's going to be super rad. And so Tom is kind of a guru of records, so I think with this interview, we'll just start with the beginning of Tom's experience in records. So maybe you can recount for us, you've been in the business a while, what was your favorite record store or favorite, you know, music store as a kid growing up in San Juan Capistrano, right?
Well, I started working for a shop in San Juan called Condor Records. That would have been back in the mid-70s. And I enjoyed working there. I was there for quite a while and learned a lot. And I thought I knew a lot about music until I started actually working with music. And that's when you really learn, because people ask you questions and you've never heard of the band before, and you have to figure out who they're talking about and help them out. And so I thought I learned a lot there, and then I moved on to Tower Records, thinking that I knew a lot about music until I started working at Tower Records and realized I didn't know anything about music.
Just a big time.
Yeah.
That's how I feel on a regular basis on Saturdays in here when people are asking about stuff like Tank Girl or, you know, Bjork. But, That's awesome. So in San Juan Capistrano, and we'll kind of gonna take a little musical journey as we go through this, as because everybody's musical taste really develops over time. So what kind of artists were you listening to when you were first getting in the business? What was your favorite records of the time?
Things were really starting to change. That's when kind of the punk rock new wave vibe was just starting to, like, I remember my first record that I would consider that genre was a Cramps EP that came out, and I just loved the album cover, and then I went home and played it, and I loved the music on it. And so things were really changing fast. Like, Tom Petty was coming out, and Talking Heads were coming out, and everything was just seemed to be more simplified and stripped down. And, you know, before it was like Yes and, you know, ELO and all this synthesizer and stuff, and, you know, then Devo and the Cramps and the Damned come along and everything changes.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't believe that you had to listen to ELO for such a long time.
I didn't.
Nothing against Jeff Lynne. Trevin Wilbury's rocks.
There's a lot against Jeff Lynne. Everything he produces sounds like an ELO record.
Well, I guess we can hold that against him. So what was it like? I mean, you kind of explained going on the Tower Records, how it's kind of like a big time store. But you definitely moved up through the ranks of Tower Records. So what was, you know, possibly, if you explain just what it was like going through being a buyer, then being a manager and moving around, what was your favorite place to move to as a Tower employee and opening stores?
Well, I think my favorite store was probably the store in Mountain View, California, which is the South Bay up in the San Francisco area. And it was just, I worked at that store 3 different times. It was just a lot of fun. Not that the other stores weren't fun, but I just seemed to really like that store. It just,
did Neil Young come in at all?
He lived in the area, yeah. we'd get Clint Eastwood in there and Joan Baez too. They're all kind of, you know, semi-local. We had a college radio station that myself and about 10 or 15 other employees all did shows at, and the station was very alternative. Like, they would play the Go-Go's, but you couldn't play the hit single, so you'd have to play something else. You know, you had to be an alternative.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
But it was like anything, like the Meat Puppets and, you know, reggae shows and jazz shows and the Louie Louie special. And it was, you know, KFJC was just really super organized and a great station, and we could make records hits just because of the combination of the Tower store and the radio station. People would come in and we knew that people are going to ask for this, and we'd have it in stock and sell it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've heard some people recount, or I think it was even in class, someone said that along the lines that radio back in that time frame was a better outsource or resource for music than it is today, that it's been so diluted by the big machine of advertisers and stuff like that. You can't play alternative stuff anymore.
Well, I worked at a lot of college radio stations, and most of them were pretty much unorganized, like the one at UC Davis wasn't. They didn't really have an idea of what they were doing. They were just doing it. KFJC was really focused and had a game plan and stuck to it, and it really showed in their programming.
That's really cool.
And so I went back to Davis after being there for a couple of years at KFJC and took all these ideas back to them. And that station, you know, changed a little bit because of that, and that was kind of cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That's way cool.
So I didn't know it could be that professional at the college level.
Well, I'm sure they're wearing a lot of suits while they're going to class. And... So coming up through, you're a DJ and you worked at Tower, so you definitely came across or came in contact with a bunch of artists, either through the radio show or coming through the Tower Records. So maybe you could recount your favorite artist interaction in the store, and maybe even tell us about your favorite, like, actual show as a Tower employee too.
Like a concert,
like
show?
Like a concert, like, because you get a bunch of tickets and stuff like that, right? So,
well, I think one of my favorite interactions was with probably with Dee Dee Ramone. He would shop at the Ann Arbor store, and I wouldn't say I became friends with him, but we would chat a lot when he came into the store, and that was kind of fun to talk to him. And then when I was in Nashville, I met a lot of people that we'd hang out after work and stuff, and and that was kind of cool too. But it's really kind of fun to sell Roseanne Cash a Frank Sinatra CD, or turn Emmylou Harris onto Lucinda Williams, that kind of thing.
That was
kind of fun.
That is really cool. Wow. And what kind of shows did you see during that time frame? Like, did you have a favorite? I mean, you told me show where you went and saw Tom Petty and had an interesting encounter, or
There was lots of shows that were memorable. the Replacements was really good. I saw them probably about seven times, but one time in Nashville it was like magic. One time in Davis it was horrific. So they had my top five best and top five worst shows ever was the Replacements. I saw Tom Petty a couple times. The time I met him was just like a very brief encounter. Shook hands and he signed my record, and that was it.
He's a man of business.
Yeah.
He's a man on a mission.
Yeah.
Trying to get home. So definitely saw a bunch of great shows, and you were, let's see here, raising a family at the time frame too, and then you came back to California. So during that time frame,
how do you know so much about me?
Because I do my research. I'm a research kind of guy. So I'm really interested in not only how your taste kind of changed from, like from the 70s, the 80s to the 90s and now, because you definitely introduced me to some great bands like Camper Von Beethoven. So that was a band that came after kind of like the whole, I guess, the art punk or post-punk thing of Talking Heads and Patti Smith. So is there any other like Camper Von Beethoven artists that you listen to or that frame? Because we also listen to jazz here too, but it's just interesting to hear, like how you get turned on to a certain artist.
Well,
like
it's funny when you're working in a record shop and when you're doing a weekly radio show, there is so much stuff coming at you in all different directions that you just discover this stuff. Somebody gives you a promo record, or you hear the DJ before you playing this song and you're just going, wow, that's great. And you just pick it up as you go. And and then you're also trying to top the other guy, and you're trying to bring stuff to the table that they haven't heard. And it becomes fun,
It's an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this seemed like a great time because you were still, you were playing records on a radio show. Is like you actually dropped a needle on a record, whereas
now
it's like a totally different.
CDs didn't exist then.
Yeah, so I could see it being just such a interesting experience to take a record off a shelf and having to time it as you fade in and out of tracks. I mean, did you have to do like oh, I'm switching a record now and I'm putting this record on?
No.
Nothing. You just had to go right into it, like a DJ, like obviously like a Now they call them DJs, but back then they were also called DJs. That's the real DJs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's got to be a hard thing to tune into now. Like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, you could.
I'm terrible at it.
No, you could do it.
I get the kind of, I get right in between the groove. And then when I have two turntables and I did it at one time, it was basically just, and then a song would start. There's no like go right into a song. I couldn't get that.
So you had
that
was the hardest thing. Dead air then.
Yes.
Yeah. What they would call dead air. Yeah.
Well, I want to start it from the beginning of the track.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I should get glasses and I can really just pop it right on.
Yeah, just listen to it and then back it up a little bit.
So you came back to California, and you're working another job at that time, and how'd you think that, or when was it when it came, it kind of dawned to you that vinyl records had a possibility of coming back, like you could, that it could be another record store again?
Well, one thing, I started buying records again, so I'm like seeing Radiohead, OK Computer available on vinyl, and it had never been on vinyl when that came out in America. So I was kind of curious I wonder what this is going to sound like. And I, that record right there is probably what really got me back into vinyl again, because I'd hear one thing on the CD and I'd hear something else on the record. And, you know, not necessarily that one was better or worse than the other, but it just made me go, whoa,
yeah.
I never heard that before, you know? And so it got me really interested again and, you know, blowing the dust off the dust cover of the turntable and cranking it up. Because prior to that, I was probably only playing records like maybe 15 times a year. Now I play, I play them at home every day, you know?
Wow. So you still had your turntable, it just didn't really...
I just never really used it.
And you kept all those records over the years?
Yeah, what am I going to do with them? I'm not going to get rid of them.
How'd you store them? Just like how they are now?
They're in shelves, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So when... Because we've had, you know, dinners and stuff over there and company and whatnot. And so what would you play for people when they came over? You just pop on a CD?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Or even put my iPod into my mixing board and just play that on random, you know?
Man, that's crazy. Now it's like such a thing.
And it depended if I liked the people or not, too. If I didn't like them, I'd put on the Residents, and then they'd probably leave in 20 minutes, you know? And
Damn. And
then I'd just turn the Residents up louder after they left.
That's amazing. Yeah. The Eskimo album.
Eskimo works really well.
Wow, that's awesome. So you started buying records again, and like Radiohead's also obviously a great one. So when did you get the concept to kind of open a store? When did you want to?
Well, I'd been thinking about that for a long time. I always thought, at the time, San Clemente didn't have a record shop, and I always thought there should be a shop downtown. And about 9 months before I was going to do it, I was already planning it. A store opened up in San Clemente, and I was truly bummed. And because I didn't want to, like, come in and either fail because there was another store, or put somebody out of business because there was another store. And I didn't think San Clemente could support two record stores. Mm-hmm. But I really think San Clemente can support two or three record stores. Now that I'm open, I would, like, welcome more stores to come to town, because we're kind of at the cul-de-sac of Orange County.
Right.
And if there's only one game in town, less people are intrigued to come down. But if there's, like, we have two stores now, that's more of a reason to come down. If we had a third one, that'd even be more of a reason to come down.
For sure. Make San Clemente a destination.
Yeah.
To come check it out.
Yeah.
Just how people migrate to places like Amoeba in LA and just get the whole exposure, the
right.
whole inventory. Man. So along the lines of you were playing CDs and vinyl at the same time, a lot of people always ask, like, what's the difference between CD and vinyl? So you get a lot of customers.
Most vinyl are 12 inches and CDs are 5.
But definitely, we know there's a difference. Maybe we should start first with...
You can use a CD to shave into, you know, like you can see yourself in it.
Oh my gosh, I thought you said actually like shave. Like, I have tried several times to shave my face with a CD, Tom, and it has never worked. Never worked. I mean, I don't have a lot of hair in my cheeks, but like it's a terrible thing. But maybe, because CDs are definitely mastered well. So how about comparing vinyl or CDs to digital downloads? When people come in,
digital downloads suck.
Yeah,
they're horrible. You don't know what you're missing unless you're listening to a copy that you can hold in your hand.
Yeah.
I a cassette tape would sound better than a digital download. So it's, you know, they're played back in real time. So digital downloads, old compressed, you're losing highs and lows. It's, I don't know, after a while, it starts to hurt my ears when I listen to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people, like right now, everybody's getting rid of their CDs, and I think they're really going to regret it, just like people that come into the shop every day and tell me, oh, I gave all my records to my brother-in-law, or I sold them all at a garage sale, and they're all bummed out that they got rid of all their records. The same thing's going to happen with CDs. 5 years from now, people are going to really regret getting rid of their CDs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great format.
Totally.
It's just different than vinyl.
Especially like that format that's on the store right now. I think it's still out there, is that every single Beatles CD in a box.
Nope, I sold it.
You sold it. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic. As a person, would be super psyched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. So when coming to the store and then buying vinyl or buying CDs, you do sell turntables here. So maybe for people who are trying to get into vinyl, what kind of stuff should they look at for when they're buying a turntable? Or should they just look at stuff like Audio Technica, which makes a great product? Or
I would, unless you are really
like what's a good starter?
Financially
set?
Strapped, yeah. Or space confined, I would avoid those all-in-one suitcase or vintage-looking ones that come in the wood with the cassette player. That those turntables are horrible, and a download might sound better than playing records on that. I think that Audio Technica AT60, or there's a Sony model. Actually, there's lots of models that are similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple, easy to use turntable is the place to start. They sell for about $100, and they're fine.
Yeah, that's awesome. They are really good turntables.
They won't destroy your records like those suitcase models.
And that's a very serious thing, is preserving your records. What would you like your customers to know about buying or coming into Moldy Toes and buying vinyl records? Like if they were like a newbie or...
Well, if they're paying cash, they won't get $1 bills back.
We should call that the royal flush. I mean, there isn't enough cards for it or pieces of currency, but I mean, I've as many a times where I've given someone a Sacagawea dollar, even though I know they're not called Sacagawea dollars anymore, on top of a 50-cent piece, on top of a $2 bill, and the person just looks at me and goes, are you fucking serious? Like, this isn't even real money. I'm like, yeah, it is real money. It's certified.
That's the trifecta of change right there.
Yes, the Department of Treasury certified that shit. It's a note. It's a bank note from the Federal Reserve. And they give us all our money. Or they make all the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
So, like, what would you... We get a lot of new people that come in to Moldy Toes to ask questions about. Like they said stuff like, I want to get back in the vinyl, or I sold my vinyl. So what do you think is the best recommendation? I mean, if there might not even be a recommendation for those people, but...
Well, like I try to tell people, and it's all in context of how old they are, I guess, because I would tell these young kids, well, you want to handle a record like a picture, and then it dawns on me they've probably haven't handled pictures. They're looking at photos on their telephone.
Yeah.
So they don't know what that means. And so I try to give them some advice on how to handle it when they're first time shoppers, you know, mm-hmm. how to take care of their records, how to hold it by the label on the edge and not put your paws all over the groove and that kind of thing.
Right. That's good. It's good feedback to give to kids.
Yeah.
But the older adults know what they're doing at all times.
Well, not necessarily. Some of those older adults never had vinyl. They just were CDs, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to think back that, I think you talked to someone today that the first CD came around 83.
Something like that.
So that's been around for almost 30-odd years.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
if you were born in the mid-70s, you probably never handled records.
Yeah, like I definitely never handled any records. So it's interesting to see that, that people are coming back to pick that kind of stuff up or even interested in it. or don't even really know much about it and want to learn more about collecting vinyl, which is kind of a cool thing. I mean, it's a great thing to see people or big organizations like Amazon starting to sell vinyl, because it definitely gives some sort of credibility to that it's coming back when someone so big carries it.
Fuck Amazon.
But I mean, it's got to be a good thing. I mean, it must mean that, you know, like, they're not an indie store, and they can't, I mean, that they can definitely squash out people, but obviously because they're the man. But I mean, it's great. It's got to be a good feeling for indie people that they're going down the right path. That there's some
vinyl is coming back into stores that are getting rid of CDs,
right?
Like Best Buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have CDs anymore, and they're bringing vinyl into all the stores.
Right. And the best feeling is when you go into Barnes & Noble and you get a coffee and look at all their 100 records.
I'll never forget that my wife and I were waiting for a movie to start over in that, what's the shopping mall at the 5 and the 405 over there?
The Spectrum?
The Spectrum.
Yes.
And so we're just kind of walking around because we got about an hour to kill. And I look into this shop window, and I see what I think is the back of record racks. And I go, are those records?
This is Urban?
And it was an Urban Outfitters. And I go, and my wife goes, yeah, those are records. And I go, why do they have them in the sun? And I couldn't understand what they were trying to do to those records. They were just sitting in a window baking.
That's crazy. I think we talked about this, that they're Urban... Outfitters is like the largest supplier or largest dealer of records.
I think they're the largest purchaser of records.
Yeah, because they have so many locations.
They have so many stores.
Which is so interesting.
But that may have changed. You know, that was a few years ago when records weren't catching on quite as quickly.
Right.
So that may have
probably
changed.
Probably Amazon squashed that out.
Maybe.
All right, so I want to go through maybe some top five artists. You can give me your opinion on them.
What, your list of top five?
I'm just going to make it out of the fly. I don't even have this on my notes.
Okay.
But I think we need to have some conversation about some music here.
Okay.
So I recently came across, I'll post a link for our listeners on the Surf Beat, but PBS has just recently acquired all this Library of Congress recordings, and they're paying people to animate the recordings. And there was one with Frank Zappa, and he had a pretty interesting conversation with the fact that America is just obsessed with fads. This is like a 72 conversation, and that he was saying that, yeah, people are just in the fans. They do whatever their peer group says they want to do. So like one peer group goes, yeah, politics. Yeah, politics are cool. Another one goes, Grand Funk Railroad. Yeah, Grand Funk Railroad. So he went into this whole conversation that the whole women's liberal movement is about. It's just a fad. It was pretty. I'll just send it to you, and I'll post it on a link. But what do you think about Frank Zappa as an artist?
He was brilliant. He was pegged as a rock and roller, but I think he was more of a classical musician trapped in the rock and roll clothes, because he knew that way he'd have an audience.
Yeah.
I saw him in concert one time. I have a sizable amount of his recordings on vinyl and CD, but I don't have everything. I think he's top-notch guy.
Mm-hmm. It's all about Shut Up and Play Your Guitar.
Yeah.
Great album.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I just finally purchased Jazz from Hell. I broke down and bought it on Discogs. Those bastards. But you never find that shit. It's not around.
I have one right there.
I looked. All right, next artist, and I know he's a favorite of yours and myself, and he's definitely a favorite of, I think, the Camarillo Mental Institution or whatever it's called. But Charlie Parker, what do you think about Charlie Parker?
Well, he was another genius that I think wasn't really fully appreciated by the public in his time. Other musicians certainly understood what was coming out of him, but I think a lot of the general public could not comprehend it.
Yeah.
And so it took a couple of decades for him to catch on, and that was kind of sad.
Right.
And he had pretty much a hard life. you know, starting drugs like when he was like 13 or something.
Yeah, and, Kansas City.
Just kind of growing up rough and tumble all the time, and just kind of sad.
Yeah, yeah. And keeping in the jazz, I mean, Charlie Parker is awesome. I think the when you originally brought in that record, that was a European press, but it was the only one available at the time, was that Charlie Parker, Dizzy and Charlie, or Dizzy and the and Bird, and then Charlie Parker solo, and then the other one was all the strings albums, was really good. I mean, it was hard to come across a record of that caliber at the time, unless you tried to collect originals or I mean, bought like some Savoy reissues, but those still weren't the classic Norman Grant's right. recordings that everyone wants to listen to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are great records.
Super cool. Rad. It's great morning music. It's what I listen to every morning. So next artist, sticking in jazz, and someone that you introduced me to, your opinion of, and another PBS guy who is awesome. Now I'll tell you after you give me your opinion on him, but Louis Armstrong.
Louis is the man. He kind of took everything to a different level. And probably one of the, you know, James Brown, the hardest working man in show business. I don't know, man. Louis was on the road all the time. And I think that that's what he lived for.
Mm-hmm. He seems awesome. Like, I came across another one of those PBS things, and he did this interview towards the later end of his life where they animated this kind of later 60s concerts. And I think he passed away in 71 or 72, so it wasn't too long before he passed away. But he gave this whole concert, this interview to these kids for 20 minutes, and they were 14 and 15, and they were interviewing for their high school radio. And he, like, turned away Sun Times, WGN. He's like, hey guys, I'm in an interview, it's serious. And you just shut the door on him, and it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool thing. I'll have to send it to you. But all right, so we're on number four. What do you think about Patti Smith?
She was one of those people that was different from everybody else, but in the same vein. She was very cutting edge, and her records are in the most case, kind of groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. You know, her first couple of records that came out, it was all during that punk thing, but she wasn't really punk, but then she had that attitude. So
yeah,
she was punk just because of her attitude, I think, a little bit, you know. And I kind of look at her more of as an artist than a musician.
Makes sense.
That makes sense.
Now with that, the poetry and
yeah.
the CBGB stuff
yeah.
going on, it's pretty cool, pretty interesting. Definitely a legendary artist. I mean, the one that we play a lot in here is, or we played Horses for a little bit, which is awesome. I think it's her first record.
And, I think so. Radio Ethiopia
yeah.
and Easter and all those records are great records.
Right, right.
I kind of lost track of her after that. Like, Easter was probably the last record I really listened to.
That was the one where she picked up that Bruce Springsteen song.
But I got to see her play with REM one time. Mm-hmm. It was in Ann Arbor, and that's where she lived. And the seats that I had were kind of to the side of the stage. And so she was going to come out and just do one or two songs with them. And she was on the side of the stage, and she was so excited. She was, like, literally jumping up and down, like, for five minutes waiting to, you know, get announced so she could go out there. She was just, like, pumped up to go. You know? So much energy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That'd be so cool. Because now you see her, and she's definitely, I don't know if she even performs anymore. But it's great. I think I saw it on a Dave Grohl documentary on, like, HBO. That he interviews all these... he's a great interviewer. I wish I could interview people like Dave Grohl, or they just love him because he's an amazing musician. I'm not sure. He's definitely committed. He's a committed guy. Anyone could fall off a stage, then come back an hour later in like a makeshift cast and finish a show. That's cool. That's great. but he was interviewing her, and she seemed to be just like this kind of prolific individual. And Yeah, I love the record, that the Horses record that I got, and Easter that I got here. It's just fantastic. So last one, and one that I've been definitely really into as of late, and you know me, is with my Harry Nilsson obsession, and he ties into Harry Nilsson as the Randy Newman. Like, what do you think about Randy Newman? Besides, everybody knows and loves him as Toy Story 1, 2, and 3. There might be a 4 or a 5 coming
out.
So
you're asking me about Randy Newman or Harry Nilsson?
Well, you can do either or, but I think Randy Newman's the real crux of the conversation.
Randy Newman, I was introduced to him very young, and I got a copy of Sail Away and...
the one you recommended me?
And I can't remember the title of the other.
Good Old Boys.
Good Old Boys. So yeah. An older cousin gave me those two records, and I was probably in junior high school at the time, and I thought that they were great. And mm-hmm. I took the lyrics of Political Science and turned it in for a history test one time, and got a good mark for that, just for transcribing the lyrics into an essay I had to
totally.
Write.
His stuff is pretty graphic.
Yeah.
When you get down to the brass tacks of you turn over Good Old Boys and all the lyrics are on the back of the sleeve, and it's not even on the inner sleeve, which
it's
on the cover.
Yeah.
Which is something that was so kind of different. You never really see lyrics on the back of a cover. Usually they, and maybe if you even, they're even generous, they'll give you an inner sleeve with lyrics. You kind of, I don't know what you guys did back in the day before the internet, where you can look up, hey, Google, like, what's the lyrics of this song? Like,
what I did is I wrote the record companies and asked them if they could send them to me. And
really?
Oftentimes they would. I get like these photocopies of the lyrics.
Did you do it for Spill the Wine? Like, did you do like, what
no.
is he saying?
No. I just do it like for Elvis Costello and stuff.
That's awesome. Because everybody goes like, what is she saying? What is she saying in Spill the Wine? And then he goes, like, does this, like, mumble thing, and then he goes, yeah, so I see that being a big one. But maybe they want to keep that interaction going. So I know we're winding down to the end of our show. And our show is brought to you by, I wish it was brought to you by PBS and Stone Brewery, but maybe we can get free beers next time. I'll try to do a plug in my show. Hopefully get at least some more enjoy-wise.
Who is it brought to you by?
It's brought to you by Chapman and Soundstream, but it's available on iTunes.
Is Soundstream what you hear in the men's room at the bar?
That's a steady stream.
Oh, okay.
So I want to ask you one more question before we go, and it's really appropriate to what's going on right now, is what's your favorite music to get, or favorite artist to get drunk to?
To get drunk to? I don't know if I have one that I would like put on with the intention just to drink.
All right, so maybe you've already had a couple of beers.
But maybe it's my favorite artist to play when I've gotten, I don't know. It's like I'm all over the map. It could be Patsy Cline one night, and it could be The Cure the next night, and it could be The Replacements the next night.
It really depends on the conversation.
But usually what happens is I've got my two turntables and a mixing board, and I just start playing stuff for like 2.5 hours until my wife threatens to kill me.
And that's a great way to end it on that one. All right, Tom. Well, again, this is Chris, your host of the Surf Beats, and we just interviewed Tom Rule, owner and proprietor of Moldy Toes Records. Moldy Toes Records is on the corner of Ola Vista and Victoria in beautiful Spanish Village by the sea, San Clemente, California, and he is open Tuesday through Sunday. Hours do vary, but please do call and give him a follow at Moldy Toes Records. Be fantastic. And do you want to say anything else to our listeners before we sign off?
I love you.
That's appropriate. We love everybody here. All right. Well, thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, that is episode number 2 of the Surf Beats. Hope you enjoyed it. This is your host, Chris Carlo, and we interviewed Tom Rule on this episode. And yeah, I hope you learned some great stuff in terms of artists to follow, platforms to listen to, learning a little bit more about the vinyl record obsession that's going on currently. So, yeah, in fact, we have a great little event coming up in terms of Record Store Day, occurring to every April 21st. It is the real Record Store Day, not the one that's on Black Friday. So all the good titles come out that Saturday as April 21st. And, yeah, basically it's a bunch of independent record companies putting out some interesting vinyl, either stuff that's been out of print for a long time or items that are on colored vinyl or some unique packages that come along with the vinyl record. So it's pretty cool. People line up across the street to get in a lot of these places. So we're stoked to offer it at Moldy Toes Records, and I hope that you come in and tune into it. So yeah, I hope you enjoy the show. Please feel free to share your comments with us on the webpage, on the blog, and on social media. Moldy Toes Records is on Facebook and Instagram. It's just at Moldy Toes Records or Moldy Toes Record Shop. And you can find Tom there. But yeah, I'm stoked you enjoy the show. Our next guest following Tom is Gary Larson. Gary Larson is a shaper at Hobie Surfboards. My first episode was with Andy Cal of Hobie Surf Shop. So with Gary, we'll dive more into the overall production and surfboard manufacturing of today and where it's going. But yeah, hope you enjoy these episodes. Please feel free to follow and comment, and we'll see you on the other side.